on FM, online, and on TuneIn 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
Welcome to episode 7 of our Planet Earth series. These programs are a mix of factual reports, poetry, and fanciful music, and all of them about our home planet. In July of 2017, one of the largest icebergs on record calved from the Larsen Sea ice shelf in Antarctica. The berg is almost as large as South Georgia Island. For more than a year, the European Space Agency Sentinel-1 satellites kept an eye over the iceberg, called A68A, as it drifted close to the remaining Larsen Sea ice shelf. Then, in early September of 2018, strong winds pushed A68A out into the Weddell Gyre. This rotated the 150-kilometre-long ice block and allowed it to drift northward. The radar imager on the Sentinel-1 satellites are able to see through cloud and operate in the polar night. In the past 2 years, A68A has drifted thousands of kilometres from its birthplace. In the past several weeks, A68A has been seen in satellite images that show that it is now rotating counterclockwise and is approaching South Georgia Island, which is in the South Atlantic Ocean. The eastern tip of A68A was, on November the 25th, just 255 kilometres from the South Georgia Island. Despite being in warmer waters than the Weddell Sea, the A68A is still as big as South Georgia Island. If the gigantuan iceberg were to reach the island's shores, it could potentially ground in the shallow waters. This could threaten wildlife, including penguins, seals, and krill. The berg could block their foraging routes. It could also crush animal and plant life on the seafloor. A68A has an area of over 4,000 square kilometres and has a mass of hundreds of billions of tons. Having come from the Larsen Sea ice shelf, it is relatively thin, with a submerged depth of 200 metres or less. This means that it could approach very close to South Georgia's coast before anchoring. It is quite common for small icebergs to ground on the island's coast, but penguins and seals can swim around them. But it would be impossible to swim around A68A. If the iceberg gets stuck, it could be there for 10 years. If, on the other hand, A68A spins around South Georgia and heads on northward, it will quickly get into warmer waters, and this warmth and the wave action will break it up. Iceberg A68A is being monitored by both European and American satellites. In April this year, it narrowly missed the South Orkney Islands. This Voice of America report from November the 9th.
The giant iceberg split off the Antarctic ice shelf in 2017. Named by scientists as A68A, it has since drifted towards South Georgia, a remote British island in the South Atlantic. Satellite images show it is still largely intact, some 150 kilometres long and 48 kilometres wide. It's on course to hit South Georgia in around 30 days. Its shallow depth means it could drift very close to the island. This video from the organisation Penguins International shows the island's huge penguin colonies. Key feeding grounds for penguins and seals could be blocked off, says scientist Geraint Tarling of the British Antarctic Survey.
That means they have to go a lot further, either go around the iceberg or to actually go further to find sources of food. And that time is quite critical at this particular period of their life cycle, they have to get back to their chicks and pups in short amounts of time so that they don't starve in the interim.
The iceberg could stick around for a decade and change the entire ecosystem.
These are globally significant populations of these species. If these species fail in this particular area, then the numbers globally are going to go down quite dramatically.
Iceberg calving in Antarctica is a natural process, but it's changing with global warming, says Tarling.
The rate at which this is happening is increasing. And so this might become more of a usual thing into the future.
The iceberg could also damage South Georgia's valuable fishing industry. The hope is that changing weather patterns could yet divert it into the open ocean. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Now, although this iceberg is so huge and, you know, it's tens of metres above the sea level at its top and a couple hundred metres deep, it won't actually increase the sea level of the world. And that's because when ice, floating ice, melts, it's already displacing its own mass in water. So the sea level won't rise. What causes sea level rise is the heating of the oceans due to global warming and also the melting of glacial and high land in Antarctica and Greenland ice. Now, it's just as well that last week a sea level measuring satellite was launched. It's called Sentinel-6. And it has a sea level measuring altimeter on it. But that's not the only instrument on the European-built Sentinel-6 satellite. The United States has one that picks up the signals from the Navistar Global Positioning System satellites.
Meteorologists understand the critical importance of advance warnings of severe storms across our nation. One of the instruments aboard Sentinel-6, the Global Navigation Satellite System Radio Occultation, or GNSSRO, will be the next tool for more accurate forecasting. Let's take a look.
Sentinel-6 microfrylate will provide important information in producing our daily weather forecasts. So how does this work? The data from the GNSSRO, that stands for Global Navigation Satellite System and Radio Occultation, a new instrument on board, is ingested into the weather models that can help us with our weather forecasting and our warnings to help protect the public.
This mission will use a special technique called radio occultation, which measures tiny changes in the radio signals broadcast by GPS and other navigation satellites. The GNSSRO instrument essentially measures the time delay of the radio signals as it goes through different layers of the atmosphere. So this allows us to unravel the temperature and moisture content of the atmosphere layer by layer.
Most of the weather that we experience comes from our west over the ocean that lacks conventional observations like what we have over land. The GNSSRO will help address these challenges by providing us very important temperature and moisture information over the ocean that will help our forecast here on the West Coast.
Studying the entire atmosphere from the surface all the way up to the stratosphere is important for us to improve our understanding of our weather and climate change.
We're very excited with the data that the GNSSRO will provide for these weather models that will ultimately help improve our forecasts and warnings to help protect the public.
The United States' National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is like our Australian Bureau of Meteorology and some divisions of the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, sort of all rolled into one. This feature, again, about the Sentinel-6 satellite and America's involvement in it.
Eric Luliette is the NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration's program scientist for Sentinel-6. NOAA is one of the Sentinel-6 partners and will use the data from this satellite on a daily basis. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric.
Thank you. It's a really exciting day to see that beautiful launch. Oh, it was so spectacular. How will Sentinel-6 help meteorologists at NOAA and across the nation? The GNSS-RO instrument will provide a temperature and humidity profile throughout the atmosphere, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, indeed. We're very excited at NOAA to be using data from all of the instruments. We'll be using from the radar, measurements of winds and waves that will go right onto forecaster screens. We'll be using the sea levels to improve ocean current forecasting, which will help for navigation. We'll also be using those sea levels to measure heat content, which is really important for sustainable fisheries. But as you also say, from how we'll be using the GNSS-RO instrument to profile the atmosphere, measuring humidity and temperature in the layers. And that'll help us do all sorts of improvements to forecasts, including using the atmospheric measurements to monitor hurricanes from their formation all the way through their whole life and dissipation.
And Eric, we have seen great improvements in forecasting hurricane tracks over the years, especially with the launch of GOES East and West. But how will Sentinel-6 help with forecasting the intensity of these storms?
Yeah, one of the reasons that hurricanes can become intense is because they feed off the energy that's stored in the upper layer of the ocean. Water in the upper layer can store a lot of heat. So what we can do with Sentinel-6 is by measuring sea level, we can measure how much the sea level has expanded. That's a proxy for how much heat there is stored there. So we can figure out how much heat and where it is and map it and send those maps to forecasters. This year alone, we've seen 10 tropical storms increase in intensity rapidly. So it's more important forever that we have than ever that we have Sentinel-6 there to for the next decade to monitor and improve hurricane forecasts.
Yes, ocean heat content is so important. I always like to think about it as a car that needs gasoline. A hurricane needs that warm water to fuel that engine, that's for sure. Now, what impacts to society do sea level changes have, and how will Sentinel-6 help us better plan and prepare for the future, Eric?
Sure. You know, for the last 30 years, we've been seeing sea levels rise using the satellites that are the predecessors to Sentinel-6. And one of the things we've learned is that sea level doesn't rise at the same rate everywhere. So it's vital that we use Sentinel-6 to map where the sea levels are rising. And we've already started seeing flooding both in clear weather from places all the way from Hawaii, the Florida Keys, to Norfolk, Virginia. So we're going to need Sentinel-6 and working with our NASA partners to help make better models to figure out where we should expect increased flooding and storm surges as sea levels continue to rise.
Thank you so much, Eric, for joining us today.
And that report from NASA at the launch last week of the Sentinel-6, which we covered in last week's The Space Show. Now, a satellite called JPSS.
Total snow and ice coverage has a profound influence on the overall health of the planet. The frozen world is called the cryosphere. Using the VIRS instrument on the JPSS satellite will help experts make vital measurements of what's changing there.
When the second joint polar satellite system is launched in 2022, a secondary satellite will be hitching a ride. Called Athena, the satellite will have a mass of 5 kilograms packed into a 15-centimeter cube. Its task will be to measure Earth's radiation budget, that is, how much radiant energy we receive from the sun and how much we re-radiate back into space. The measurements will be compared with those made by other satellites.
This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is planet Earth.
A new NASA study has found that the heat from warm waters draining into the Arctic Ocean is contributing to the melting of Arctic sea ice each summer. A research team at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory used satellite data to measure the surface temperature of the waters discharging from Canada's Mackenzie River during the summer of 2012. They observed a sudden influx of warm river waters into the sea. This rapidly warmed the surface layers of the ocean. As a consequence, melting of sea ice was enhanced. Their researchers used data from microwave sensors on the TERRA satellite, that's T-E-R-R-A. The moderate resolution imaging spectroradiometer, or MODIS, M-O-D-I-S, produced maps of ocean water surface temperature in the Beaufort Sea. They observed that on 2012, June the 14th, a stretch of landfast sea ice formed a barrier that held the river discharge close to its delta. Landfast sea ice is ice that is stuck to the coastline. The river water broke through the ice barrier sometime between June 14 and July 5 of that year. The team saw that the average surface temperature of the area of open water increased by 6.5 degrees Celsius. In reporting their findings, the scientists noted that when the Mackenzie River's water is held back behind the sea ice barrier, it accumulates and gets warmer later in the summer. When it breaks through the barrier, a strong surge unleashes warmer waters into the Arctic Ocean that are very effective at melting sea ice. Without this ice barrier, the warm river waters would trickle out little by little. There would be more time for the heat to dissipate to the atmosphere and to the cooler, deeper ocean. The scientific team has estimated the heat energy carried by the discharge of the 72 rivers in North America, Europe, and Asia that flow into the Arctic Ocean. These rivers have an average temperature of around 5 degrees Celsius. The TERRA satellite's MODIS instrument can accurately measure sea surface temperature where rivers discharge warm waters into the Arctic Ocean. However, researchers lack reliable field measurements of subsurface temperatures across the mouths of river channels. These field measurements are needed to further understand the contribution of sea ice melt. Interestingly, the NASA scientists note that this Arctic process contrasts starkly with those that occur in Antarctica. That frozen continent has no large rivers. The sea ice cover in the southern ocean surrounding Antarctica has been relatively stable, while Arctic sea ice has been declining rapidly over the past decade. And this is a recording by Stephen Hawking for Earth Day.
I am very aware of the preciousness of time. Seize the moment. Act now. I have spent my life traveling across the universe, inside my mind. Through theoretical physics, I have sought to answer some of the great questions. But there are other challenges. Other big questions which must be answered, and these will also need a new generation who are interested, engaged, even with an understanding of science. How will we feed an ever-growing population? Provide clean water, generate renewable energy, prevent and cure disease, and slow down global climate change. I hope that science and technology will provide the answers to these questions, but it will take people, human beings with knowledge and understanding, to implement these solutions. One of the great revelations of the space age has been the perspective it has given humanity on ourselves. When we see the Earth from space, we see ourselves as a whole. We see the unity and not the divisions. It is such a simple image. With a compelling message, one planet, one human race. We are here together, and we need to live together, with tolerance and respect. We must become global citizens. I have been enormously privileged, through my work, to be able to contribute to our understanding of the universe. But it would be an empty universe indeed, if it were not for the people I love, and who love me. We are all time travelers, journeying together into the future. But let us work together to make that future a place we want to visit. Be brave, be determined, overcome the odds. It can be done.
The late Stephen Hawking, sadly missed.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM,
where this is the Space Show.
This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is planet Earth.
In 2006, a satellite called CloudSat was launched into orbit. 14 years later, CloudSat has long exceeded its prime mission and is now in extended operations. The science objectives for CloudSat are to better understand the vertical structure and the physical and chemical properties of clouds. It does so using a radar to identify water droplets and ice crystals in clouds. In 2011, the satellite's battery failed, so the radar can now only operate when the satellite is in sunlight. It is otherwise operating normally and continues into the second decade collecting useful scientific data. One of the most remarkable achievements by CloudSat science team is the development of precipitation profile products. Because of the satellite, for the first time, we now know where rainfall and snowfall occurs. From the CloudSat rainfall data, scientists have learned that averaged globally, clouds produce rain nearly 20% of the time. One surprise finding was that a significant amount of rainfall is falling as lighter precipitation from shallow cumulus clouds over the tropical oceans. By comparison, heritage passive measurements of rainfall often grossly underestimated the amount of rain falling around the globe. In some cases, the error is almost 60%. This is because the ground-based methods miss the precipitation from these shallower cumulus clouds. The satellite-led advances in understanding the internal mechanics of precipitation in clouds and have enabled scientists to better model clouds. To date, there have been over 3,000 peer-reviewed publications using CloudSat data. One of these reports was authored by Hani Takahashi of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. She has used CloudSat observations to study trends in cloud top heights. She says that no statistically significant trends have been discovered over the 14-year data record. However, she adds, analysis of a 90-year climate model simulation suggests that if carbon emissions continue on a business-as-usual scenario, it is likely upward shifts in cloud heights will be observable in the mid to late 2020s as the atmosphere warms. Takahashi explains that these upward shifts would act as a positive feedback on climate by enhancing the expected warming. However, even the best satellite missions must end. In 2017 June, one of CloudSat's reaction wheels displayed significant friction. Reaction wheels are spun up or down to control the attitude of a satellite, in other words, which way it points. Simple conservation of angular momentum. It was decided to move the satellite to a lower orbit than its 705-kilometer altitude one. However, while preparations were being made for this orbit change, another of the remaining three reaction wheels began displaying intermittent problems. In 2018 February, CloudSat executed two successful thruster control burns to lower the altitude of its orbit. This orbit lowering was needed to avoid the risk of collision with other scientific satellites. In this new orbit, attempts are being made to overcome the second reaction wheel problem. When successful, CloudSat resumed scientific operations. This new orbit poses two problems. Firstly, it is not synchronized with six other satellites, reducing the synergistic value of the CloudSat data. Secondly, at this lower orbit, atmospheric drag will cause its orbit to slowly erode and re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. That should happen in about 25 years' time. The problems with CloudSat have not dampened the enthusiasm of scientists. When NASA put out a call for proposals to use the satellite, 101 submissions were made. 21 were accepted. Of these, 11 were new principal investigators and 10 were continuing investigators. CloudSat has returned so much data that even if the satellite fails, NASA intends next year to invite more scientists into the project. Mission controllers say that CloudSat has ample remaining fuel through to 2026 to formation fly with another satellite called Calypso. The fuel is needed to adjust the orbit so that it remains at the same orbit as Calypso's. From time to time, fuel is also used to slightly speed up or slow down CloudSat so as to avoid colliding with other satellites. And we're going to have a story about colliding or potentially colliding satellites after this song by Mark Horning. Now, this is a settler on Mars. In sometime in the future, and it reconciles himself to no longer being an earthling. Mark Horning with "The Earth Is Home No More."
"20 years ago, you sent me to this barren, airless land. And we built a thriving colony from lunar rock and sand. I helped to build a city grand beneath this glass-steel dome. Now you say my work is done, it's time for going home. The earth is home no more. No, your earth is my home no more. It's where I raised a family and where my friends are near. Man learns what's important when he lives on the frontier. We may not have your luxuries or many fancy things, but I've seen my children flying free on human-powered wings. The earth is home no more. No, your earth is my home no more. You've never seen the stars above a river made of light, nor seen the shadows down below, pure black on brilliant white. And though the earth is beautiful, I must again repeat, I'd rather see it in my sky than just beneath my feet. The earth is home no more. No, your earth is my home no more. I've buried several good friends here, for the moon is harsh and cold. And now you claim it's time to go, now that I'm growing old. The new world's call for younger hands to serve your bottom line. Well, I may be slower than I was, but my skills are sharp and fine. The earth is home no more. No, your earth is my home no more. Rockets leave the landing pad for Earth each week or so, but I won't be on the manifest. You cannot make me go.
That's Mark Horning, The Earth is Home No More. On November the 27th, Roscosmos reported that the Indian Kartosat-2F satellite passed 224 metres from the Russian Canopus-5-3 spacecraft. Both satellites are designed for remote sensing of the Earth's resources. Had the satellites collided, they would have shattered into thousands of pieces. Remember the film Gravity? Well, Kartosat-2F was launched in 2018. Here's a report from the Indian Space Research Organisation prepared at that time.
Cartography application through the Earth observation satellites is an important tool which helps to facilitate the developmental works. It enables policy makers and implementing agencies to quickly gather accurate information on existing ground conditions in the area of interest. This immensely helps to initiate, implement, and monitor the developmental projects in an efficient and scientific manner. This Kartosat-2 satellite is meant for continuation and enhancing the services being provided by Kartosat-2 series satellites. It is seventh in a series of advanced Indian remote sensing satellites built by ISRO, with the primary objective of providing high-resolution scene-specific spot imageries. The spacecraft carries a panchromatic camera, a four-band multispectral camera, and event monitoring cameras. The Kartosat-2 series satellite will be placed into a 505 kilometers sun-synchronous polar orbit and is expected to provide satellite-based cartography services for around 5 years.
The head of the Indian Space Research Organisation disputes the Roscosmos claim, saying the missed distance was, wait for it, 420 metres. They also said that an avoidance maneuver would only be done if the predicted separation would be less than 150 meters. On November the 7th, the Indian Space Research Organization launched its EOS-01 Earth Observation Satellite. It is intended for applications in agriculture, forestry, and disaster management. With this ISRO report from 2017 highlights a previous Earth measuring satellite, that is the CARTOSAT 2D.
From the days of launching sounding rockets in early 70s, India has travelled a long and difficult road to develop self-reliance in the field of space launch vehicles technology. The know-how and the nuances in this field are closely guarded internationally and have been learned indigenously in a hard way. The PSLV C-2 mission launched 3 satellites. C-11 launched 10 satellites. The C-34 mission, launched in 2016, placed 20 satellites in a single mission. The PSLV C-37 mission is very special. In order to utilize its full capacity, the rocket this time will launch 104 satellites. Among its large number of foreign co-passenger nano-satellites, it will inject ISRO's CARTOSAT 2 series satellite and 2 ISRO nano-satellites, INS-1A and 1B, each weighing around 9 kilograms, into sun-synchronous polar orbits. This extraordinary mission has been very demanding for the engineering team and required a lot of care in its design. The orbit determination of the satellites at the point of their separation from the launch vehicle will be carried out using onboard NavIC receivers. INS-1A and 1B will be separated using the recently inducted ISRO wedge lock separation system called IWL-150. It will take around 1,006 seconds for the rocket to reach the orbit. The separation process of all the satellites is planned to be captured using 5 cameras of the onboard video imaging system and would take 715 seconds to complete. CARTOSAT is a follow-on mission in the series of satellites, primarily for cartographic applications. The 3-axis stabilized satellite is configured with a mission objective of providing spot images in panchromatic and multispectral bands. The imageries will be used for urban and rural applications, coastal land use and regulation, management of utilities like road networks, water distribution, creation of land use maps, change detection to bring out geographical and man-made features. It will also service various other land and geographical information systems applications. The INS-1A and 1B are remote sensing satellites with specific applications. 88 nanosatellites, each weighing approximately 5 kilograms, called Dove satellites, belong to a US company called Planet. And 8 satellites called Lima belong to Spire Global Incorporated, USA. These satellites are for remote sensing applications. Naif 1 of UAE, Al Farabi 1 of Kazakhstan, Pias of Netherlands, and Dido 2 of Switzerland are technology demonstrators, while BGU SAT from Israel is for science applications.